So we decided to do Pesach as a topic for this week, topic for next week, and specifically what I thought to do this morning, and there's Goldie coming in, what I thought to do this morning was to talk about the phenomenon of Shabbos being Erev Pesach, which I know concerns a lot of people. There are all sorts of halachic hoops that we have to jump through in terms of what we're going to eat at the meals for Shabbos, the first two meals, the timing of Shabbos Shudis, managing, you know, any chametz that's around, doing all the Seder preparations before Shabbos Erev Pesach. And it really causes people to say, oh no, what am I going to do? Shabbos is Erev Pesach, but what I want to show is that actually there's another, which is that it's actually, oh yes, Shabbos is Erev Pesach, this actually creates opportunities for a greater Pesach, not a worse Pesach. If you take a look on the sheet, at the top of the sheet, I gave you three links. The first one is just a page on the Beit Midrash website where we have all sorts of pre-Pesach materials ranging from our Seder companion to links to Shiurim and so on. Second is we're doing our second Haggadah night. We did our first one already earlier this week, but we're doing another one on Monday evening. Actually, the time on that sheet is wrong. It's 8:15, not 8 o'clock. But if you show up at 8 o'clock, you know, we won't kick you out. We'll find something for you to do. But that's at 8:15 on Monday evening. And then the third one is a quick guide for issues when Erev Pesach is Shabbos from a halachic perspective. Some of the issues and how they're dealt with. As always, I'm going to tell you, go to your shul rav for psak, but this should be a good introduction to the topics. But what I want to do now is talk about, again, Erev Pesach, that is Shabbos, not from a halachic perspective, but in terms of the opportunities it creates for us. You tell me, what are the benefits to having Erev Pesach be Shabbos?
Nothing but one.
Really?
Actually, you come into the Seder very relaxed. You get a little Shabbos between you and chill.
Yeah. Normally, Seder night is coming after a full day of everything, right? In the morning, getting rid of the last chametz, getting all the stuff switched over, getting rid of the old toothbrushes, poking up the new toothbrushes, who's going to go burn the chametz? Are we burning the chametz? Is it raining outside? Is it snowing outside? Because why not? It's Toronto. All the different elements to getting the Seder ready and remembering what you forgot. You know, I remember one year where I ended up going out twice on Erev Pesach in the afternoon close to Yantif because we broke the corkscrew. Just opening up wine for the Seder. I went through three corkscrews on Erev Pesach. The craziest things happen when it's Erev Pesach normally. Now, there's nothing to do all day in terms of preparations. You're not allowed to prepare. So not only that, you could take a nap. Who gets to take a nap on Erev Pesach? But that's what's going to happen this year. So that's number one. Hadassah, you couldn't think of one thing? Having a nap? I think that qualifies. I say this as someone whose youngest child is, 14. That may change things. Your mileage may vary. But what else? What other advantages are there? I can think of two more before we even get to the shir. There's a practice of reading part of Maggid on Shabbat HaGadol, right? The Shabbos before Pesach. So usually that's like 5 days in advance. And so you may read it through, but realistically, over the next 5 days of preparing for Pesach, you don't end up remembering much of what you did on the Shabbos afternoon 5 days earlier, and frankly, it's a little harder to focus. Again, though, the relaxed atmosphere of this Shabbat HaGadol, which is the day before Pesach, will allow for a better reading of the Haggadah, a better opportunity to learn it. Third element, which I realize people don't often think of, is we focus so much on the night of the Seder, on the theme of Kadesha Yishalu Hatinokos, in order to get the children to ask questions. We do all sorts of things in a very strange way, deliberately, in order to get them to ask questions. But usually, once they've seen, you know, a year or two of Pesach, they basically know all the things that we're doing that are strange. Like, they know, yeah, we're dipping twice. Yeah, we're washing, even though we're not having bread. Like, they're familiar with that. This year, all the strange things in the run-up to Pesach, you know, for example, a standard way, not the only way, but a standard way to manage the meals on Shabbos morning in order to get in Shalosh Shudas is to daven really early, have one meal, have a 15-20 minute break, and then have a second meal, all before you have to get rid of your chametz, all before you have to stop eating chametz. So they're going to see things like that. That's going to make them ask questions. Things are going to be different. It's really, we will fulfill having the children ask questions. So there are these elements which I think are benefits to this year's schedule, but I want to talk about something bigger than that, and it goes to the concept that we call in Hebrew, either, depending on how you pronounce things, Neshama Yisera or Neshama Yitera. And I want to actually do a quick poll here, which is an anonymous poll. I'm doing the formal Zoom polling. I'm going to launch a poll, anonymous. You can answer as many as you want. What is a neshama yetera? What is an extra soul? You've got choices. A natural consequence of holding our work on Shabbos, an extra soul we receive on Shabbos, a supernatural ability to eat on Shabbos without gaining weight. I'm not sure. Never heard of it. You can answer with all of them. You can click as many of them as you like. I'll give you another few seconds. Only 4 people have responded so far. Come on, guys. There we go. That's more. I'll give it another 3 seconds. Okay. So
is one of the answers correct?
Maybe more than one. I am sharing the results here so you can see. We have 29% responded a natural consequence of halting our work on Shabbos. 86% selected an extra soul we receive on Shabbos. No one chose a supernatural ability to eat on Shabbos without gaining weight. You've never heard that? You've never heard anyone say that? I can't see you while I'm looking at the poll results. There we go.
We heard it, but we believe
it. Ah, that's another story. And yeah, we got 14% saying, I'm not sure. So first of all, no, it's not the source of the idea that you can eat on Shabbos without gaining weight, although we will see where that comes from, or where I think that comes from. I'm not 100% sure, but I think this is where it comes from. What exactly is this Neshama Yisera? What is the basis for it? So if you take a look on your sheet at source number 1, Gemara in Beitza, also appears in the Gemara at the end of Tanis. Neshama Yisera Nosein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'adam Erev Shabbos. Hashem gives a person an extra soul on Erev Shabbos. Ulamotzei Shabbos Notlin Osa Hemenu. After Shabbos ends, they take it away. Where does this come from? Pasuk says, Shavas Vayinafash. This was last week's Torah reading, Parshas Kisisa. Uvayom HaShvi'i, on day 7, Shavas got halted. Vayinafash, and the word vayinafash is a very hard word to translate. We would usually translate it, if we weren't talking about Hashem, as he rested. But God doesn't rest. He was refreshed. God doesn't need to be refreshed. What does vayinafash mean? So the Gemara says it's a compound. Vay, nefesh. Vay, woe, W-O-E, oy, O-Y, I suppose. That's vai, like oive, nefesh. The meaning, shavas, once one has halted, once one has completed Shabbos, they lose the nefesh. At that point, this extra soul that they had on Shabbos is gone. That's the source for the idea of neshama yisera. There's a lot of very interesting debate as far as when it enters. I brought you in source number 2, a series of opinions. One view, you can see it there. The Tzitz Eliezer brings the idea that it comes in Friday after midday. Another view suggests that it's when you're davening Maariv Friday night, when you're about to start Shmona Esrei. That's when it arrives. Another view, the two malachim who come to the house, right? It's a Gemara, it's not just a song. There are two malachim who come to the house and they look at how people are observing Shabbos. That's when it joins it. That's when it joins us. And then another approach, when you eat and drink Friday night, that's when you get the Neshama Yisera. All sorts of different perspectives. I want to come back to that in a little bit. But what exactly is this Neshama Yisera? What are we talking about? So there are two basic schools of thought. One school of thought is rational. The other school of thought is supernatural. The rational school of thought is cited by the Rashba in source number 3, Rabbi Shlomo Ibn Aderet. He says, V'yesh mefarshim, and this was the first choice in the poll, V'yesh mefarshim, some explain, Neshama Yisera dahainu hamenucha veha'oneg shanefesh motza'ai. He says, the Neshama Yisera means the rest and the pleasure that the soul finds, ki ilohi neshama yisera, as though there were an extra soul. Uksha over mimenu, and then when it leaves him, nichnas bimei atorach v'ha'inui, you go back to the weekdays, you go back to work, ki ilu avda mimenu neshama yisera shu nechlash, it's as though you lost an extra neshama. You feel weak leaving Shabbos. This idea, which the Rashba quotes, he himself has another idea, but he quotes this idea, says, Neshama Yisera isn't some kind of supernatural thing. It's not an extra soul being given to you. It's simply that you feel better on Shabbos, because you're eating and you're drinking and you're not going to work, and you're just there. So as long as your children aren't torturing you, it's actually, you know, a pleasant, nice experience. It's Neshama Yisera. That's this idea, which I now go back to number 2, and the question of when the Neshama Yisera enters, this would fit with the last view that we brought, when you eat and drink Friday night, right? When you start actually eating and drinking, so that's when you're going to feel better. That's one school of thought. That's the rational way to look at Neshama Yisera. Clear? Okay. The supernatural camp is the dominant camp. And there are a lot of sort of sub-approaches within it. So, for example, there's Rashi in source number 4. Similar comment in Rabbeinu Hananel at the end of Tanis, which my father showed me. But take a look at the Rashi here. Rashi writes, Rochav lev lemenucha ulesimcha. It gives you a broad spirit for rest, for joy, v'lios pasuach l'ravacha, to be open wide, v'yochal v'yishteh, you eat, you drink, v'ein nafsho katsa alav, and your spirit will not be revolted. What does that mean? Explain Rashi. What's he saying? I got a lot of silent screens here. Okay. I think what he's suggesting, I mean, along the lines of what Donnie just said, is that the experience of having a Neshama Yisera is such that you don't feel like it's animalistic for you to be eating and drinking. You don't feel like you're gorging yourself. This is all now converted to a spiritual plane. It has a more spiritual feel to it, even though what you're doing is a very sort of base, mundane type of a thing. You are rendering the physical spiritual. That's the way that I understand it. And like I said, Rabbeinu Hananel has this comment. He says, you eat and drink like a gibor, like a warrior. I wonder if this isn't where the eat without gaining weight on Shabbos idea comes from. You know, it sort of sounds like it could be from there. Someone got it from there. So the way Rashi frames it, the Neshama Yisera experience is an experience in which your physicality becomes more spiritual. Even the physical is converted to spiritual. Ibn Ezra has a different take. If you take a look at source number 5, we have two commentaries of Ibn Ezra, at least two that I know of anyway, on Sefer Shmos. One of them is the one that you see printed in the standard Chumash, And then there's this one, which is the extended commentary. Here, commenting on the Aseres HaDibros, where we are told, Beirach Hashem es Yom HaShabbos, God blessed Shabbos, look what he says. Hashem Kidesh Zehayom, God sanctified this day, Vizimno Lekabel Hanafashos Tosefes Chochma Yoser Mikol Hayamim, Hashem prepared it to receive greater wisdom than other days. It's an intellectual thing, the Neshama Yesera. It's an opportunity to have greater intellectual insight, this Neshama Yesera. And so it says, Beirach Hashem, God blessed the day of Shabbos. He increased the day of Shabbos, giving us this extra wisdom on this day. So it's an intellectual boost, says Ibn Ezra. The Rashba has another idea about the soul reaching its perfection, but I'm going to skip that idea in order to show you the most extreme version of this, which is Ramban, in source number 6. And you know what? I'm actually going to do it outside of the text, because the text itself gets into some mystical ideas that I don't know how to explain. But the key part of what he says is that it's actually a Neshama Yesera. It's an extra soul. It's what it sounds like. There's actually an added nefesh that a person is receiving. So, we have here multiple explanations for what a neshama yesera is. We have just rational pleasure, you're enjoying the day. We have Rashi, that it is turning the physical into something spiritual. We have intellectual growth, according to Ibn Ezra. And then you have the idea that there's actually an extra neshama that you're receiving. Well, this idea of the neshama yesera, you know, to me, if I didn't know it was a Gemara, would sound like fluff. Okay, fine. You enjoy the day. But you should know it has halachic ramifications. So I gave you a few bullet points in source number 7 to show you what I mean. One, the Nishmat Kol Chai prayer, Nishmas Kol Chai, that we say in davening, is actually meant to allude to the Neshama Yesera. Which is why, on Hoshana Rabbah, when we say a lot of the Shabbos morning Sukkot Izimra, we don't say Nishmas Kol Chai, because there is no Neshama Yesera on Hoshana Rabbah. More substantively, in terms of things that people think about, Sheva Brachos. What's the requirement in order to be able to hold Sheva Brachos for a couple? What do we need?
A
minyan. And what else?
A new person.
Panam chadashos, right? You need to have somebody who has not eaten with them yet in the week of the wedding. However, there's one day when you don't need panam chadashos, right? Sorry, Liba, what? You're muted.
Shabbos.
Right. On Shabbos, you don't need panam chadashos. Why not? Says the Betzal HaShtern and the Betzal HaChochma, because Shabbos is Panam Chadashos. What do you mean Shabbos is Panam Chadashos? It's the Neshama Yesera. The extra Neshama that you have creates the Simcha of Panam Chadashos. That's where the joy is. So it has halachic ramifications. And the most interesting of the halachic ramifications is the use of Besamim at Havdalah. Why do we use Besamim when Shabbos ends? We are taught it's because of the pain of losing the Neshama Yesera. That's why we do it. So on Shabbos, we gain these elements of the Neshama Yesera. I should note, because this is going to be important in a little bit, it's not as though a person is going to sense, to feel different, if they don't make the attempt. In other words, it's not as though I'm just automatically, it's Saturday, I feel different now. That doesn't work. It requires an element of sensitization, whether you're taking the first view, the rational view, right? The view that is just that you're enjoying it more. You still have to be conscious of that. You have to be engaged in that. We need to actually be relaxing in order to feel relaxed. Or something that is manifest from the outside, intellectually, spiritually, whatever that is, It requires sensitization. We have to be sitting there thinking about it in trying to connect to it, or else you're not going to feel it. It's not automatic. But the Aruch HaShulchan has a comment about this, but I'm going to skip the Aruch HaShulchan's comment right now. I want to switch now, because we haven't yet gotten to Pesach. We keep talking about Shabbos. Does Yom Tov have a Neshama Yisera? I'm going to do a poll. Ha. Polls are fun. I'm going to do a poll here, and again, it's anonymous, and it's straightforward. Does Yom Tov have a Neshama Yisera? Yes, no, or uncertain? Now we got 4, 6, 7 answers. Still have some to go. I'll give another 5 seconds. Okay, there we go. So the results are in. 75% of respondents say no, Yom Tov does not have a Neshama Yisera. And then 25% say uncertain. No one is saying yes. Okay, why would you say no? So many people said no. What's the basis to say no? Oh. Yeah, Goldie.
There are certain things that you're allowed to do on Yom Tov that you're not allowed to do on.
Good. So the Rashba makes that point that Goldie made. It's in source number 9. He says, you're allowed to prepare food on Yom Tov. There's work that you are doing. If it's supposed to be, you know, this is within the rational camp of Neshama Yisera, that Neshama Yisera is a function of resting. So you're not really resting. You're doing food preparation on Yom Tov. So therefore, there isn't so much rest. That's one reason to say that Yom Tov does not have a Neshama Yisera. Give me another reason. Well, the Gemara, right, that we brought before, Vayinafash, right?
For Shabbos.
Right, the Gemara only mentioned Shabbos. The Gemara didn't say anything about Yom Tov. Now, you could argue you are Shovet on Yom Tov. You do halt Malacha in general on Yom Tov, but nonetheless, the Gemara didn't mention it. Last reason not to, the last reason to argue that there is no Neshama Yisera on Yom Tov, is Tosus pointed out, I brought it in source number 8, when we do Havdalah after Shabbos, after Yom Tov, do we use Besamim? No, we do not, right? Havdalah after Yom Tov does not have Besamim. So if the purpose of Besamim is supposed to be to ease people out of the state of having an Neshama Yisera, we don't use Besamim, that must mean there wasn't an Neshama Yisera. That's the argument against. However, the Zohar in Parshas Lech Lecha absolutely says there is a Neshama Yisera for Yom Tov. It even says there's a Neshama Yisera for Rosh Chodesh, which I find very interesting. But there is a Neshama Yisera. So writes the Zohar, and so says the Rashbam, who is decidedly not the Zohar. The Rashbam is known usually as the supreme rationalist among Rashi's grandchildren and the authors of the Tosfos. The Rashbam says, of course, there's a Neshama Yisera. And he says, I'll prove it to you. Does anybody know the acronym for how we do Havdalah at the Seder this year? Right? Havdalah after Shabbos leading into Yom Tov? Yaknahaz, says Dina. Correct. You want to walk us through what each one stands for, or should I do that?
Yayin.
Yeah. Yayin, Bar Priya Gafen.
No, the
okay, the Kuf is Kiddush. Meaning Mekadesh Yisrael ve'azmanim. Yeah. Ner. Right, Ner.
Havdalah.
Havdalah, good. Hamavdil. And Zman, Shechianu. You did it. Okay, Shkar. Yayin Kiddush, Ner, Havdalah, Zman. So we're going to make the Bar Priya Gafen. We're going to make Mekadesh Yisrael ve'azmanim. We're going to do Bar Ma'arei Ha'esh. We're going to do Hamavdil ben Kodesh le'Kodesh. And we do Shechianu. Right? And don't worry if you don't remember the acronym because it's in your Haggadah. But what's missing from this Havdalah / Kiddush experience? Besamim. There are no Besamim. Says the Rashbam, if there are no Besamim from Shabbos leading into Yom Tov, it must mean that there is a Neshama Yisera on Yom Tov. Yom Tov has one as well. And many side with the Rashbam. After all, we do say Nishmas in davening on Yom Tov morning. So then why don't we use Besamim after Yom Tov is over? Right? Like we noted, there is the argument of you're not using Besamim after Yom Tov. Why are we not using Besamim then? So in fact, there is a Yerushalmi that's quoted that actually says that you do use Besamim, but we don't. So maybe it's because the come down after Yom Tov is not so great, but here I want to show you something fantastic. Take a look at source number 10. The Ramban has a book, not that well known, Ha'amuna v'habitachon, in which he writes, he's discussing something that he says is a remez, it hints to the neshama yisera that a person has on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and then he writes, Ve'ena mistalekes b'cholo shamoed. When Yom Tov ends and you start Chol HaMoed, he says it does not leave us. We still have it. Ve'lo b'motzai Yom Tov l'chol. And he says, when Yom Tov ends altogether, and you go back to the mundane days, the Neshama Yisera of Yom Tov stays. He says, that's why there's no Besamim when you end Yom Tov. The Neshama Yisera of Yom Tov doesn't leave. The Neshama Yisera of Shabbos leaves. Neshama Yisera of Yom Tov does not leave. That's a remarkable idea. Certainly in terms of Kedusha, Shabbos is greater than Yom Tov. Right? Shabbos is on a higher level than Yom Tov is. But Yom Tov is retaining the Neshama Yisera where Shabbos is not. Why would that be? Anybody? Why should the Yom Tov Neshama Yisera remain? Do we have anyone with Sachat Shavar Hasidim in their background? Nope. Okay. So the first Sachat Shavar Rebbe was the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer, Rav Avram Bornstein, was a brilliant Talmud Chacham, best known for his halachic works, Avnei Nezer. But an out of this world Talmud Chacham. His son wrote the Shem Mishmuel. His son was the second Sachat Shavar Rebbe, Shmuel Bornstein. He wrote the Shem Mishmuel, which is also very well known. Drashos on the Parsha, on Yom Tov, also brilliant. So the Shem Mishmuel brings an idea to explain the Ramban from his father. And essentially, his starting point is that the Kedusha that we create is greater than the Kedusha that is conferred upon us miraculously. When we do something to create and invest holiness, that is greater than when it's something that's just given to us. So he uses that, for example, if you take a look at source number 11, I'm not going to read it inside, I think, I think it works better without that, but he says the Jews originally gained their Kedusha, their holiness at Har Sinai, because Hashem said, poof, you're holy. Then we committed the Egel, the golden calf. Then we did tshuva. He says, we ended up on a higher level after the Egel than we were before. Because afterwards it came from us. And he links that to the Luchos, the tablets. Who made the first set of Luchos? Alina, you're muted. The first set of Luchos. Hashem makes the first set entirely. Gives them to Moshe. Second set of Luchos is what Alina is thinking of, right? Moshe chisels them, psol lecha, and then Hashem writes the text on it. But Moshe has to form the Luchos. Says the Shem Mishmuel, the second set retained their holiness. The first set, they're smashed, now they're just shivrei luchos, they're broken luchos. We treat them with respect, but they don't have the same standing. The second set of luchos, he says, retain their kedusha, and even though now they're missing, buried with the aron, they're still glowing, he says. They retain their kedusha. It's reminiscent of an idea that I've heard in the name of Rav Soloveitchik. There are two mountains in Judaism. What are the two mountains in Judaism? Don't tell me Har Gerizim, Har Eval. Two mountains in Judaism that we know of as holy places.
Har Habayit and Har Moriah.
Har Habayit? Right. Good. Har Sinai and Har HaMoriah. Har HaMoriah being Har HaBayit. That's correct. Har Sinai, where we got the Torah. Har HaMoriah or Har HaBayit, where the Akedah was and where the Beis HaMikdash stands. Where is Har Sinai? Anybody know?
Sinai Desert.
Yeah, somewhere in the Sinai Desert. Archaeologists may have different theories. Rosh Shlomo Goren thought that he knew where Har Sinai was. He went up Har Sinai to write and to complete a Sefer Torah. There was I think it was Olamenu magazine or something that I read as a kid, had an article about how there's a rock on Har Sinai that you can find where you break it open. However many times you break it open, you will find inside the image of a burning bush because the snap was on Har Sinai. Very interesting stuff. Sure, entirely 100% true. The Har Sinai, we don't know anything about. Why don't we know anything about where Har Sinai is? Why don't we know? Why don't we care? Because as the Torah...
Worship the mountain.
Sorry?
Hashem didn't want us to worship the mountain itself, like it wasn't really important.
So you could suggest it's an active decision by Hashem. I don't want you to worship the mountain where I was manifest and gave you the Torah. But then I'll ask, why is it that Har HaMoriah retains its Kedusha, retains its holiness? The Temple Mount should also lose its holiness when there's no Beis HaMikdash there. Har Sinai, the Torah says, Bimshoch HaYovel Hema Yalu Vahar. Once the shofar sounds after Matan Torah, you can go up on the mountain, do whatever you like. There's no holiness anymore. Har HaMoriah, Har HaBayit, retains its holiness. So rules the Rambam. Oh, she has to answer the poll now. Yeah, now you need two answers. You need two poll answers. You have to answer for both. So Har HaBayit and Har HaMoriah retain their Kedusha. They retain their holiness because it's Kedusha that we gave it, says Rav Soloveitchik. It came about by something we did. Whereas Har Sinai is just Hashem created the Kedusha. Hashem comes there to give us the Torah. Har HaMoriah, where the Akedah was, represents the actions of Avraham and Yitzchak. The Beis HaMikdash is something we built. It's our investment, and therefore it retains the Kedusha. There's even a discussion regarding the general Kedusha that Israel gained when we entered the land. We entered the land under Yehoshua, Kedusha Rishona, we gave it initial sanctity, and then we entered again when Cyrus permitted us to return, right, under Zerubbabel, and we gave the land Kedusha Shnia, second sanctity. The first Kedusha disappears. The second Kedusha, we paskin, does not disappear. Why does the first one disappear but not the second one? So there's a lot of discussion about this. But the first Kedusha, the initial Kedusha that's given to the land, I shouldn't say we paskin, because there's a lot of discussion about this. Let me not oversimplify. But the first Kedusha comes with miracles from Hashem, given to the Jews who come in under Yehoshua. Hashem is doing it. The second Kedusha is our effort. So, bringing all of this back to Shabbos versus Yom Tov. The Kedusha of Shabbos, writes the Avnei Nezer, quoting his father in source number 12, the Kedusha of Shabbos comes from Hashem. Every seventh day is Shabbos. And it doesn't matter what we do. It's going to happen anyway. The Kedusha of Yom Tov is dependent on Beis Din setting the calendar. Beis Din declares the new moon. That's what sets up which day is going to be Yom Tov. So we are the ones who generate the Kedusha of Yom Tov. And that is why the Neshama Yisera does not leave after Yom Tov. The Neshama Yisera of Shabbos is there on Shabbos, and then it's gone. Hashem sent it, and now it ends. The Neshama Yisera of Yom Tov, though, is something that we create with our preparation for Yom Tov. And that's something that stays. He even makes the point in the last piece that I brought you in source number 13. I don't know if you've ever heard this. Regarding Shabbos, we say the 3 days before Shabbos are considered to be preparation for Shabbos. And then the 3 days afterwards are also associated with that Shabbos. And then you start again on the next one. Wednesday starts the preparation for Shabbos. It has actually certain halachic ramifications. How long before Yom Tov are we supposed to start preparing for Yom Tov?
A month,
30 days, says the Gemara. Shloshim yom, kodem achag. Right, there's some discussion, what about Shavuos? Does Shavuos really need 30 days? That's its own discussion. But the Gemara seems to present it as 30 days beforehand is when you're supposed to start preparing. So naturally, it's going to have greater Kedusha. It's going to have greater holiness. Because it's a 30-day process. So, here's what we have so far, and then we're going to bring this all back to Pesach, and Erev Pesach being Shabbos. And hopefully this will all, you know, make sense. We have number one, the concept of an extra neshama of Shabbos, whether that's a rational experience of resting and enjoyment, whether it is a supernatural boost to our intellect, whether it is a supernatural rendering of the physical as spiritual, whether it's an extra neshama, whatever that is, we gain it for Shabbos, it enhances our experience if we're sensitive to it, and then it goes away. Yom Tov, because of all the prep we do in advance, gains it and keeps it. Well, in a normal Pesach, every Pesach has to have the greatest possible neshama yisera. Because if you want to talk about a day that has preparation, I mean, I gave this shiur last night to a group, and when I said that you spend 30 days preparing for Pesach, I saw a lot of people laughing at me, like, you think only 30 days? Are you kidding? part of that may be a generational thing, I'm not sure, but they're preparing long in advance. So you should have a great neshama yisera for Pesach, but you're exhausted by the time you get to Pesach. You've been running around, shopping, cleaning, cooking, worrying about the chametz. There's a lot of potential anxiety involved with it. People get to the Seder, unfortunately, in a normal year, they're wrung out. Whether the neshama yisera is a rational product of rest, which you haven't yet experienced at the Seder, or it's some supernatural spiritual boon sent by God, the pre-Pesach tension and exhaustion has to dull the experience when Yom Tov begins. It has to. But then you get a calendar like we have this year, when Shabbos is Erev Pesach. So we make all our Seder preparations before Shabbos. Come Shabbos, you get the rejuvenating nap. You have a full day of a Neshama Yisera in advance. Whether it's rational in terms of the enjoyment of the day, or whether it's supernatural, helping to heighten our sensitivity, our intellect, whatever, we can use that through the day as we prepare the Haggadah on Shabbos afternoon. And then you go, Bein Kodesh L'Kodesh, from one sanctity to the next. We scaffold the Yom Tov experience on the Shabbos experience. And that's what I meant, going back to what I asked you in the beginning. That's what I meant when I said that this calendar is actually the best calendar. It really is an unusual opportunity. In a normal year, you get to the Seder, you're burnt out. This year, you have the advantage of having an Neshama Yisera for a day beforehand, and when that one expires, a new one comes in. So that the opportunity is there for us to get good rest on Shabbos, right? Going with the rational view of the Neshama Yisera, to eat and drink in a spiritual way, as Rashi explained it. Perhaps even to have an extra nefesh, as Ramban explained it. To have that intellectual connection, as Ibn Ezra read it. All of those pieces to help us enter the Seder, Matzai Shabbos, prepared for an unprecedented experience. You follow? I shouldn't say unprecedented, because this does happen. There was a series of them in 2001, 2005, and 2008 were all this luach. And then it didn't happen again until now. So you have this 13-year gap. But it's on the schedule again. Yeah, I don't know what's going to be when we have a Beis HaMikdash and a Beis Din setting the calendar, whether they're going to try to avoid this luach or not. But it's scheduled to happen in 2025. So keep your notes on this shiur, and then if I try to give you this shiur again in 4 years, you'll be able to tell me you remember what we said. But this is an opportunity. I don't look at it as an oh no. I really think that it really is an oh yes. It's something that we could really grow from. Comments, questions? Or do people have to run out and prepare for Pesach? Earning an Neshama Yesera. Think of it that way.
Oh, thanks. Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, have a